Souls Forum is a public forum from the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church at 4501 Walnut Street in Kansas City, Missouri. It deals with significant issues, especially those that involve ethical values of the contemporary world and that promote critical thinking. While the All Souls Forum is on a summer hiatus, we will present programming of a similar nature. In this episode, Brooke Palmer, a Kansas City native, reflects on how diversity positively affected her education. She then hosts a panel discussion about several contemporary topics with a diverse group of high school students who are friends and appreciate their diversity. These teens, Carmen, Sania, Mion, and Jude, are part of a larger group of friends that think and feel their differences are inspiring and beneficial. They call themselves Saving the World.
My name is Brooke Palmer, and I am a content developer for K-12 education and assessment publishing, and also a freelance writer and journalist. As a Kansas Cityan born and raised, I was privileged to attend the Kansas City Magnet Schools program in the 1980s and 90s, having graduated from Paseo Academy of Fine and Performing Arts High School in 1995. During this time frame, the Magnet Schools program was attempting to desegregate Kansas City's public schools by busing Caucasian students from the suburbs into the urban core to attend schools with curriculum designed from a particular theme or focus. At the Kansas City Middle School of the Arts and Paseo High School, our learning was funneled through a focus on fine and performing arts. But another large component of what was taught was a type of socialization around integration, respect, and democracy. These words may not have been written in the school's mission statement at the time, but they are guiding principles that I took away from my school experience and have applied to all parts of my life since graduating. Rather than studying African American history only during Black History Month, for instance, or relegating different cultural lessons to certain periods of time in the school year, the Kansas City schools I attended celebrated the culture and relevance of all student populations throughout the year, with full student participation regardless of each individual student's race, culture, or ethnicity. Through this atmosphere of learning, we experienced diversity and integration at its finest level, creating and performing the arts through a platform of various experiences and backgrounds fused together to represent something larger than each individual group. This isn't to say that we melded together perfectly at all times, like America's fabled melting pot that so rarely reflects reality. Of course, there were certain levels of self-segregation in the lunchroom or other places, where students of similar backgrounds socialized more closely with peers with whom we felt most comfortable. But the larger experience was one of tolerance and understanding, respect, and even celebration of each other's similarities and differences at a cultural level. I believe this learning experience fed the worldview of so many of us, helping develop us into adults who not only understand the need for and relevance of integration and diversity at the societal level, but also who strive for it personally, recognizing what we're missing out on when we continue to live in a segregated manner. And part of what comes with this worldview is a certain level of comfort in facing difference, in asking tough questions and sharing our individual perspectives without bowing to the fear of judgment, or even the fear of speaking against the common power structure that tries to dominate our society and keep people apart based off of their race, religion, gender identity, socioeconomic background, level of education, or basic values. Today, I'm able to watch another generation grow up in the Kansas City schools through interactions with my nieces and nephews and their friends. While the school system has faced much turmoil and uncertainty throughout the years since I graduated in the mid-90s, I'm happy that many students are still able to integrate through their education in our city and to learn these same lessons about what a true democracy might look like if everyone bands together, despite our differences, and progresses as one equal force of varying individuals. My niece Carmen, who attended Lincoln Academy prior to the quarantine in 2020, has a group of friends that so eloquently represents the power of integration through respect, shared experience, and creativity. While they may not recognize their own significance to an observer such as myself, they do recognize the beauty and strength of the creative force and inspiration they exude through their relationships as they develop their own worldviews. Because of the optimism, positivity, and activism they build together through their relationships, they have named their friendship group Saving the World. Today, I have brought together a portion of this social group for a panel conversation about cultural topics to learn a bit more about how their differences and similarities have enhanced their friendships and their overall experience as young people at the brink of adulthood. For as challenging as it is at times to maintain that push for integration, diversity, and equality for all citizens of Kansas City and beyond, the shared outcome is worth the struggle. And with young advocates like these, together we just might create the opportunity for saving the world. All right, welcome. My name is Brooke Palmer. I am a Kansas City resident in Hyde Park, and I have a niece who is currently a junior in high school. And over the years, I've gotten to know her group of friends, and she currently has this very, from my opinion, fascinating, creative, diverse group of friendships. And I don't know all of them individually at length, but I've been able to meet and interact with some of them. And I've heard so many stories and seen pictures, and I'm just very inspired by the things that they do together, the topics that they cover and talk about, and the creative energy that they bring to the world. So I would like each of you to please introduce yourselves. Let us know your first and last name, what pronoun you go by, she, he, they, your age, and what school you go to. And if you feel comfortable, also provide your racial identity.
Okay. I'll go first. I'm Mon Charity. Oh yeah, I go by she, her. I'm 17, and I go to Lincoln College Prep. Oh, yeah, I guess I identify as Black, African-American.
Hello, I am the niece, Carmen Alexandra Cantu. I'm 17 years old. I go by she, her. I currently attend an online program called Kansas City Virtual Academy, and I am white.
My name is Tanea Best. I'm 17 years old. I attend Lincoln College Prep. I go by she, her, and my racial identity is African-American.
My name is Jude Anderson. I go to Lincoln as well. Pronouns are he, him, but gender is a toxic construct. And yeah, I'm as white as a jar of mayonnaise, I guess.
All right. So I will start with my first question goes to you, Carmen. So, Carmen, how did this particular group of friendships develop, and what would you say is your biggest link or bond?
So, we all attended Lincoln College Prep at one point in time all together. I started there as a freshman, and then once quarantine hit, that's when I switched over to the KCVA program that I'm currently doing now. But my freshman year, my introductory into high school, is when I met these fellow friends of mine. I met them all within that same year, but each one was pretty sporadic and different with each encounter. I'd say that our biggest, what was the
bond,
our bond or link, would be the creative energies that we kind of exude, like you brought up in the introduction. I think that they all meld really well together, and we are just all very colorful and magical. So yeah, that's our biggest bond link, I would say.
And if anyone has anything to add after any of these questions, just we never decided on a signal, but just put your hand up and I'll pass the laptop to you. All right. So, Saneya, my next question is for you. And I hopefully this will make sense to you. But Carmen had told me that you attend a program or a workshop that's about African-American history and culture, and that you had invited this group of friends to join you for one of the events. And my question is, why was it important for you to include this particular group of friends in that experience with you?
Well, the organization that I'm part of is, it's called BACON, which is a youth organization that is partnered with the Black Archives of Mid-America. And what the Black Archives of Mid-America, what they do is we get like artifacts and things like that, like from lynchings and just, you know, from history concerning Black people, and we put them in museums and we put them up so that people can see and people can learn about the culture. And so BACON is a subgroup of that for the youth between like middle school and high school. And what we kind of do is kind of try to work within the community with like voters registration, car washes, toy drives, things like that. Just, you know, the overall help of the community. But I invited my friends because I think, like we keep saying, that we bring up a thousand times about the creativity that this group brings. And I think that BACON can learn a lot from people of all races. You know what I mean? I don't think that necessarily it has to be only Black people. Yes, our group is centered around the help and the progression of the Black community. However, I don't think that means that we don't need anybody else's help. And specifically Jude, I had Jude come because we were starting a film. And I know my friend Jude, he's very into film. He's an amazing, talented, very, very talented writer. And we needed him on board, of course. And my other friends being Carmen, Mayon and Geraldine, who wasn't able to make it today, they have a lot to offer to the table as well, just with the promotion and marketing of the things that we choose to do later in the future. So I thought it would be a good chance to collaborate. So,
and I want to open it to any of the rest of you to say, how did you feel like you belonged in this setting, and what did you get out of it?
So I had been to the Black Archives. Oh yeah, it's Mayon again. And I have been to the Black Archives before to like see exhibits. I remember this was an exhibit where it was this house of this old slave, and they actually had it in the museum, and it was really interesting. So going back there, it was really nice to go to because, you know, it's like really diverse at Lincoln, but it's nice to be in like a setting where there's people that look like you.
You know, yeah, I mean, there's definitely feelings of not belonging just because of, you know, my race. I'm white, and there's some conversations that I definitely feel like, you know, maybe they, I don't know if uncomfortable is the right word, but something like that. But yeah, I fell in love, and I've with the group, and, I've got a lot of cool friends from there too now, so that's really nice.
What's uncomfortable about the conversations? Is it because you feel like you can't speak on them, or is it because you feel like they're not geared towards you? Do you feel like we're not accepting of what you have to say about it? So what makes you feel uncomfortable with this conversation?
I can't talk about it because I don't have the right, you know? And so it's more just being uncomfortable with, you know, yeah, and my place, and you know, like the history of like, you know, Black people and white people for all of history. So yeah.
So it's Carmen again. I attended one BACON meeting right after Saneya had invited us all, and I have not been back since. However, I did feel as though the setting was extremely comfortable, and Saneya had mentioned to me that she noticed that I was a little bit like more quieter than usual in that kind of setting. And I honestly felt as though like the best thing I could do that day was just listen. Mm. There were no topics that were brought up where I felt as though I couldn't, give my two cents on. However, I was just there to listen and to hear that day. So, yeah.
Jude, I hope you don't mind if I ask you a pointed question. And, of course, you can choose not to answer it. But I'll admit, I had assumed that you were a mixed race of black and white or Hispanic and white. Okay. And so you are mixed Hispanic and white. Okay, but you feel that you identify mostly as white as a jar of mayonnaise?
Yeah.
Because you certainly don't look as white as a jar of mayonnaise.
More olive.
Olive oil mayonnaise.
I believe my great-grandmother came from Mexico.
All right, ready for the next question? Thank you, guys. Mayon, this question is for you. Do you consider yourself a feminist?
I think, this is mine again, I think that's a really loaded question.
Right.
Because this is really off topic, but I watch a lot of, like, commentary videos on YouTube. So, like, I know about all the different, like, feminists, like the New Age and, like, all of that. So, I don't know. I think it's really confusing. I would much rather be more enlightened on the subject before I, like, call myself a feminist, because I'm still really confused with, like, all the different definitions and, like, terms, so I think I'd say I'm undecided.
Well, feminism and people of color, because, yeah, like Mon was saying, that really was a loaded question, and simply for the fact that feminism not necessarily being adjacent with people of color, and so I feel like because of that, I find it hard to be a black woman and call myself a feminism, because I don't believe that feminism... Well, the origins of feminism were necessarily including black women. You know what I mean? Because I feel like we hear about Susan B. Anthony's and the Elizabeth, you know, people like that who were fighting for women's rights, but they weren't fighting for black women's life or colored women's life, you know? And so I feel like that would be the only thing that would keep me from being a feminism per se. But, I mean, I'm siding with the woman before I side with the man. So, I mean, it's...
And this is mine again to add on to that. I went to private school for a lot of my schooling. So, like, a lot of it, like Sanaya said, was, like, very much Caucasian-centered. So I always thought that was feminism. So, like, as I've grown up and, like, learned more, it's definitely, like, broadened my scope. So I think that's why I'm still undecided, because, like, learning that, like, all of that was kind of, like, not from a person that would have looked like me is, like, really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Jude here. I agree with Sanaya's sentiment that, yeah, feminism can, at like, now that I think about it, can be seen, like, as a thing that was, you know, started by white women and made for white women, something like that. And what's crazy is, earlier this morning, like, Mayon, I like to watch a lot of videos like that, and I was watching this one about where this woman was talking about the advent of the girl boss, because we all, you know that new, new phrase, was it gatekeep? That's like gatekeep girl boss, something like that, right? Okay. So that started, the woman who coined that, she started her own little brand. She had like they had a Netflix show named after the girl boss thing that she coined. But at the end of the day, she was a terrible CEO, and her company went bankrupt.
Okay.
And it was just a couple like examples of I guess what you would call a girl boss, and the pitfalls, and how also, like, at the end of the day, it was like girl boss was a thing made by white women to make white women feel better, because it's only these white women who are doing this. You feel me? So yeah, I just thought that was interesting too, how that could play into it. But I know the question was not for me, but would I say I was a feminist? Yes, because I believe at the root of it, it is simply just, you know, men and women, equality, boom. But, you know, a lot of things can get muddled when, you know, politics get all up in it. Anyways, that's my two cents.
And I just want to add that I recently read a book, and you all might be interested in it. It's called How We Get Free, the Combahee River Collective. And it's a group of African-American women that also happen to be queer, identify as queer. And they had the same experience that you guys are talking about, and this was in the 70s, and they mm-hmm. felt like the movement, they were very involved in feminist movement, but they felt excluded or just that it wasn't that inclusive, mm-hmm. and that there were things being talked about that, like you said, were more specific to white women's experiences and weren't inclusive of black women's experiences. And so they created their own collective. So, and they talked about the intersectionality between race with sex discrimination. And also on top of that, queer discrimination against, for their sexual orientation and identity. And, they created this statement together about that movement. And, I think you would really find it interesting. And the book actually also has an interview with the woman who created the Black Lives Matter statement. Mm-hmm. And she also identifies as queer. So they talk a lot about those issues. Mm-hmm. But they do consider themselves Black feminists. Mm-hmm. Right. All right. Jude, actually, my next question is for you. And my question is, what does the statement Black Lives Matter mean to you? And do you feel you belong within that statement?
Black Lives Matter. What that means to me. That's a biggie. Yeah, I mean, it says what it says. I mean, it's not something that I would really look into deeply that much. It's a surface level statement. Black lives matter as much as any other lives matter. It's simple as that. Where I fit in, I don't know. I'm not black. But I like that sentiment, and I will support that sentiment. And I think it's a good sentiment to follow, but I do think that, you know, as things have happened and as society has progressed, like, the use of that has become a little more performative, you know, like, now it's something that you see on, like, every locally owned cafe or every, like, suburban street now, or every restaurant. And I think a little of that is it doesn't rub me the right way, to be honest. But again, I don't feel like that's my place, so look the other way. And at the end of the day, I do think Black Lives Matter, and right now that is something that we should be fighting for, because it may not seem like that and people may not think the same way.
So this is Mayon. I think for Jude, where you would fall is being like an ally. Like, no matter what you are, like, you have to, like, support. And you have, like, not to brag for Jude or anything, like, he literally got arrested at the riots on the plaza. Like, him and one of our other friends, like, got arrested. And I, like, picked her up from jail, and I really see her as an ally for that. Like, even if we're not on the greatest terms, like, I really see that as something really good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is Sinead speaking. I had a question about Jude saying about the performative aspect of this. Of course, I know how I feel as a black person and how I feel about, you know, what's performative, what's not.
Again, I just think it's, like, a lot of it is, you know, people doing it just because, you know, it's the way, sort of a bandwagoner type thing. But as we have discussed before, like, for white people, it's just, or really, I guess, any other race, but I can speak from a white person's perspective that this hurt, in quotes, that they've experienced, and are realizing that, you know, black people are getting, you know, murdered by police every day, and, you know, they're just they don't live the same lives, and they don't live, you know, very fun lives. But there's definitely a better way I could put that. I don't know, but for them, it's been over, you know, the past 4 years where they've experienced this, whereas for a black person, it's been their whole life. So there's a little bit of like, not that you're tired of it, but it's just like, it's, yeah, maybe so. You know, it is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. And for white people, it's like, oh, yeah. You know, we just came into it. Let's go. And maybe it's, you know, maybe there's definitely people out there who actually, you know, want change and all that. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of people are hypocrites. And for you to, for businesses to do that too, same with the Pride Month rainbow thing, like, a little bit too much. Like, just, you don't need that, you know, just be honest with the consumer and, just, you know, actually do things that would help rather than putting a sign up, this is Black Lives Matter, and that's it, you know, that's all you're doing.
All right, so I realized I kind of skipped around a little bit, and I had gone out of order, and some of what you guys are saying are reflecting the different questions, which is great. But I'm going to keep on this topic for now, and then I'm going to go back to a little bit of a different direction. But for now, I'm going to go send a question to you, Mayon, and then Saneya. So Mayon, and you mentioned this a moment ago about your private school experience, but you now are with Lincoln. So how has your high school experience at Lincoln contributed to your overall experience with diversity? And this is sort of the second part. Do you feel that having diversity in your relationships and life experiences is helpful or meaningful?
This is Mayon, and I think Lincoln has really helped broaden the diversity in my life. My parents are like quote unquote liberal, I guess. So as a child, I saw like a lot of different people, but it was still like mainly white people. And in private school, it was like I was one of the only like three black kids there. So at Lincoln, meeting a lot of new kids, like I never met any like Arab kids, or I'd never been met that many like Hispanic kids ever. So it's definitely been a culture shock, but like I've learned a lot. And it is definitely important to have diversity in your life, because you're just stuck with the same people around you all the time. You're never going to be able to enlighten yourself about the troubles of other people. And you really can't feel connected to it at all. You don't have people around you that look like people.
Yes. All right. Thank you. And Saneya, my next question is for you. Why do you feel that our country or our society continues to live in a segregated manner? And how can people help change that?
This is Saneya, and the question was, why do I think that the society still chooses to live in a segregated manner? And I think, I have strong feelings about segregation, honestly. And I think a big reason for segregation, I think, on white's behalf is fear, honestly. I think that they fear what they can't understand or what they don't know or what their brains cannot conceive. And I think a lot of the ways that people of color choose to express themselves are ways that white people cannot conceive or fathom or understand. And I think that is scary. But it's scary for anybody. Just even taking away race, just things that you are uncomfortable with are scary for people. So I think that has a lot to do with why they choose to be segregated. And comfort. I think when you're born into a white family, all you know is white. Of course, you're going to be comfortable being around whites, you know. And I think the same thing for black people, because really, honestly, I'm very uncomfortable in white spaces. I'm so utterly uncomfortable. And speaking about segregation, Louis Farrakhan is a leader of the Nation of Islam. I won't say leader, but a teacher of the Nation of Islam. And he is really, really adamant about segregation and about black people having one side of the country and white people having another. And I'm going to be honest and say I don't think that's the worst thing to happen. I think the only reason I'm not behind it is because of there will never be separate but equal. It will never be. If you take black people and put them into a place in the world, and you take white people, there's going to be
there's going to be underfunding, and there's going to be way worse things that are happening in these communities and things like that. So I don't think that it would necessarily be beneficial to Black people to do that, because we're under a white regime, all of that. We're under white rule. But if in a perfect world where everybody was offered the same opportunities, I would not be against segregation if it really was segregated but equal, because I do feel more comfortable around people who are like me. Because, see, my life has been very, very split up between, one minute I'll be surrounded by a bunch of white people, and then I'll be surrounded by a bunch of Black people. Like, I started off in Raymore, which is, I went to a predominantly white school, which was from grades like kindergarten to like third grade. And then I moved to an island called Barbados, and it was all Black. Like, it was all Black people, literally white people. So handful of white people that went to my school, and it was just, the island was Black, and the island is a very, very small island. So, you know, you knew pretty much every white person or every white family that lived there, because it was rare. And I can honestly say that was the most, that was the safest I've ever felt, is being in an island where it was only Black people, and you knew everybody and everybody knew each other. Coming back to the States, I went immediately to Lee Summit, which is a predominantly white school, and it really was a cultural shock. It really, really was, because I even had an instance where a white girl said the N-word, and I confronted her, not even really head on. I was like, oh, she said the N-word, and the principal took me in because the white girl thought we were bullying her, and he told me that, oh, just things like this happen. And I couldn't even wrap my head around what was happening to me in that office. Like, just him blatantly excusing the actions of this girl. She knew better. We were eighth grade, but we knew better. We knew that these weren't words we're supposed to be using. But it was just really weird. And so because of those situations, and then being racially profiled, it's just because of those situations, which is why I'm not against segregation, being around just Black people. But I know that that's not going to benefit my community whatsoever. Like, even the Black Panther Party knew that it was going to benefit our community. They worked with white doctors because we needed other people. We knew that we couldn't do this by ourselves. So, yeah, that's how I feel about segregation. Yeah.
Can I ask you a follow-up question? Mm-hmm. I think I can. Yeah, so if our society lived in a separate but equal way, let's just say moving forward, you would potentially lose your interactions and relationships with Carmen and Jude. And how would you feel about that?
Mm-hmm. So the idea I have of separate but equal, I'm thinking more of like living situations. Like, I live in Black neighborhoods, go to school in Black neighborhoods, but I was thinking separate equal. I could still see my friends who aren't, or not people of color. That's kind of how I thought about it. Like, we could still see each other because they can't keep us from being at parks and things like that together. I just think going to school with all Black people, going to living in all Black areas, that's what I was kind of thinking about segregation. But if we're talking about that extreme, as in like we can't even see people of different colors, I don't think I would be too happy with that, because I really, really do honor the friendships I have with the people I've met. And it was just, it's very by chance. I know, because honestly, I've never been the one to go, you know, run to white people and just be immersed in that culture. I really have never been comfortable. Like I said, I keep saying I've never been comfortable with groups of white people. And so this is why I know that the friendships I do have with white people are ones, really, really meaningful ones, because I'm not one to, step out of race and things like that. But I realized, like Maya was saying, it was very crucial to my development. Honestly, learning people outside of my race and things like that, I think it was very crucial. So, yes, I wouldn't want to be away from the friends I've made. Just if segregation was to make life easier, I'd really want that, because friends and brothers, like, I have three brothers and two sisters and uncles. I have triple uncles and all. They're just people, Black men who are being targeted and things like that. And I just feel like if there was any way that we could stop that, I would want that. You know, I just, that's kind of how I feel. All
right. Thank you. So I have a couple more questions. I have a question for Jude, a question for Carmen, and then I'm going to end, kind of move us toward the tail end with a few open-ended questions for whomever wants to address them. So kind of shifting back to the direction I was going when I asked Mayon about being a feminist. And Jude, you kind of directed me to this question already, but my question for you, it starts with me just contextualizing. You are a male among many strong young women in this circle of friends. How do you feel that your gender or identity as a male contributes to the dynamic of your friendship and vice versa?
I feel like I think that's why we work so well, is because there's that dynamic where it's a bunch of girls and then one guy. I think that evens it out a little bit. And I think that's there's some well needed knowledge on both ends, you know. I think it's a symbiotic relationship where we just help each other, and it is definitely, you know, since I'm in a room with them right now, I'm trying to pick my words wisely. You know what it definitely is? It's an experience, you know, to be surrounded by so many beautiful, hardworking, smart women. And, I wouldn't trade that experience, whether it's good or bad, which is, it's not really ever bad, but I wouldn't trade that experience for anything else because I love it. And let me gather my thoughts. I have a few. I got two solid brothers, you know. The rest are like, we're cool, we're acquaintances, I'd say. But I think it's definitely challenging just because there's just whole different ways that we operate in our day-to-day lives and socially. And there's things that I've learned, you know, not to say, to withheld, that are probably good, like, because I should be quiet sometimes and shut up, because, you know, I'm a straight man, I'm a straight white man, that's what I need to do, it's my job, it's like the bare minimum, you know, so that's where they've helped me. But, you know, there's also some things where, you know, I feel like, you know, I just, some things I still don't understand, you know, and I don't know why I gravitate towards women. I don't know why. I don't know. I don't know.
What I'd like to add to Jude's response, and this is something holding on to the whole time he's been talking, but I think that something that works really well within like the gender dynamic of our group is the fluidity that all of us have between our feminine and masculine energies. Like, we are all extremely balanced in that sphere, I would say. So I don't think that all of us are just dwelling on the fact that Jude is the only guy in our friend group. I don't think that that's really a factor that we tend to dwell on, but yeah, I'd say our feminine and masculine energies for every person in this group are very well balanced. So yeah, that's all I really wanted to add to that. Back to Jude.
Yeah, I definitely want to say that. I forgot to mention that. Like, yeah, it's not a big, it's almost never a big thing. I do feel like, you know, a lot of the times I just feel like, you know, one of the gals, you know, just like Sex in the City, you know, that's us. I'm obviously Samantha.
Another question for you, and this is something I know about you because you're my niece, so I've known you your entire life, and I've developed as you've developed, and one of the things I really respect or find myself being inspired by you is the kind of conscientious self-care and self-empowerment that you put into your life. Like, I think it's I think it's subconscious as well. It's just part of your personality and who you are. But I also think that you're very conscientious about how you do it so that you are contributing to your own enlightenment and development and how to be a better person and just how to be a more comfortable, happy person. And so my question is, how do you build and develop that? How do you develop a sense of female empowerment in your life or just empowerment?
Hey, I absolutely adore this question and I really appreciate that acknowledgement on your end because this is actually something that I've been reflecting on like so much recently and even something that I've discussed amongst this group, which is that for my entire life, like for as long as I can remember, everything I did was extremely ritualistic. And I honestly think that I got a lot of that from you. Like, honestly, I'm just going to be straight up and say that a lot of that did come directly from you and the way that I saw you do things and put ceremonious aspects into just day-to-day things, how to like put meaning into things that may be just like normal day-to-day things like taking a shower or bathing, like how to make things ritualistic and meaningful. And that is something that has empowered me since, you know, since day one. But I think for me, harnessing my feminine energy and my femininity and empowering that side of me, it's essential. It's just something that I've learned to do through everything that I do. I think that there are like more specific outlets that I could narrow it down to, but a lot of my empowerment is spiritual, mm-hmm. and it comes through like the spiritual awakenings that I've had throughout my life as well. But it's a lot of just like inner working and making those small things ritualistic and putting magic into things that don't already have magic, I would say. So yeah, that's my answer. Passing over to June.
Yes. Brooke, right? What you said about Carmen was so right, because so I definitely 100% feel the same way, and that's something that I envy about her so much. And that's like, that's part of the reason that, like, you know, even after everything that I'm sitting at this table today, because that I'm so envious of that aspect of Carmen because I don't know how she does it. I want to be like that so bad, and I want to be able, you know, because I want to because she seems like it's just something that I want to do and I want to get into, but for the life of me, I can't figure out how or where to start. But it seems like for her, she's got it together, you know. But anyways, yeah. I just wanted to hype her up because that's my bestie. She's how hypers. And yeah.
And I'm Sinead speaking. And I'm gonna piggyback a little bit off of what Jude is saying because Carmen has been my chick since freshman year. And when I tell you, wow, it makes me so emotional just being able to see pictures of Carmen. Because I know I was right there with her during these times, and seeing Carmen experience metamorphosis throughout the years has been the most rewarding thing I could have literally ever been gifted in my life. Because being alongside her, she has always been inclusive with the, like how Brooke was saying about her inner work and self-care. She has always made sure to include us on that journey and include us and make sure we are taking the same measures that she is taking. Like we, for the longest, actually recently, me and Carmen have been trying to do daily prayer, and we've been trying to get prayer shawls so that we can start praying in the morning, just thanking the universe and thanking the creator and thanking the giver for life and for breath and just to be here, and we're thankful for the people around us and things like that. Anyway, I started out to say that Carmen has always been one who not only focused about how she develops as the divine being that she is, but also how we develop alongside her. And I think that's a very commendable thing because it's not too many people who are worried about anybody else besides themselves. And just to know that Carmen has always been this humble and caring person, even when she doesn't want to be. Like, even if she is having a bad day, I think she's still always there to listen, always there to guide us, and always there to, you know, show us new things and broaden our horizon. I think that's another reason why the group is together, just because we all yearn that, and we all give that to each other in different ways. And I guess Carmen, in that aspect, is very spiritually. It's very, make sure you're taking care of yourself. And I think Carmen always knows what to say. She always knows when to say it, too. And I admire her for that. Yeah.
Thank you, guys. This has been really inspiring, and it's turned out exactly how I envisioned it, in terms of you guys just having so much wonderful, honest things to say, and to say it so well. So I'm going to end with a couple, just two questions, and I'm going to throw them out here. And one of them is kind of coming right off of what you all said. And this question is, will your friendships remain a priority after graduation? And kind of coupled with that, but you can answer it separately, what do you envision for your own near future, individually or as a group?
This is Tanae speaking. I just thought it was funny that this question was brought up, because we have been thinking, this has been on our mind heavily. Like, we've really been thinking about how this will go on after high school, but we know we really built on this connection. Like, we just, even down to the name, like, we realized that we were all like celestial beings, like, you know, before we even came together, we knew this. And so then we came together, like, it's like all the powers just came together, and we combined into something so strong and so beautiful and so bright. And that's when we created the name Saving the World, because we genuinely believed that we could save the world with our each individual talents and aspirations. And so as just for the group aspect, it will always be a thing, because it's beyond high school. It's beyond the era that we're in right now. It's this connection just runs so deep, and it's just crazy. And we'll definitely be keeping in touch.
Because I definitely know that Jude here, I definitely know that like, there's that, I guess, stereotype of, you know, after high school, you leave all your friends, blah, blah, blah. But, like, it's a new age, you know, and we're able to stay in contact with each other when we're on other ends of the world. But back then, like, you couldn't. You'd see them at the 10-year reunion or something. So right now, I think, not just us, but a lot of relationships are the same. And, you know, unfortunately, we might be in different places, but what I think at the root of it keeps us together is that we're all growing through the same stuff at the same time. So we know. Right. And so right now we're all going through the same thing. And that really makes me feel better, because there's definitely people out there who you know, share the same interests as me, that also are going through the same things as me, either mentally or physically or spiritually or whatever. Yes. Yeah. So, for lifers, you know, connected. And, yeah, that's it.
This is Carmen. I absolutely agree with what both Sinead and Jude have shared regarding our parting and how we'll maintain it. I know that I am only 17 years old, and that is just a tiny little fraction of the life that I have left to live ahead of me, and that I haven't even met all the people that I'm going to love and that are going to come into my life and do the things that they will with what I give them. But I have never been more sure about this group right here. I think that, like we keep saying, for lifers, this is for life. Like, and after that too. Yes, I think that regardless of distance or how many miles away we are, it's like that metamorphosis, you know? The butterfly flaps its wings and we'll feel it. We'll feel it. So passing it over to Myron.
Okay, this is Myron. And everybody's basically said everything about the group, but the second question, wasn't it about, like, ourselves?
Yeah,
so since everybody, like, basically answered that question, like, said what I would say, I don't know, honestly. I don't know why I want to answer this, because I have no idea, but I'm Yeah, I guess my goal is to try to figure out during senior year, but if not, I hope I can take a gap year and, like, travel or something. I think that'd be interesting. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I forgot about that question, too. I was confident in the fact that I didn't know what I was going to do, and that, you know, when the time came, it would hit me as most things do, because I feel like a sentiment that I carry with myself a lot is the universe got me, or someone got me, or the sun got me, or something, because, you know, it's like throughout the year I got F's and C's and D's, but at the end of the year, it's always A's and B's. That's how I am in life. I'm chilling at the end of the rain, at the end of the dark, messy, dangerous, smelly tunnel. You know, there's a pot of gold. But I've recently figured, like, maybe that shouldn't be it. Maybe I shouldn't, you know, just let the wind carry me. Maybe I should, like, really have a plan, like most people do. I just, man, it's just my plan doesn't really align with what people want me to do. Because the only reason I'm going to high school right now is because I have to. And the only reason that I would even want to go to college is because I think I have to. I think that's what I'm supposed to do. But I really can't. I don't know if I can do another institution for 4 years or something. So I was thinking, I don't know, I leave this country. I go somewhere else for a year, build my portfolio, see where the wind takes me over there, meet different people, do different things, come back, see if, you know, there's an NYU type college that would get me, because, you know, with my grades right now, I'm going to get into mediocre colleges, which is not what I want to do. So I take that year, I make a bunch of films, and then I come back and I show them what I did, and, you know, they're going to see my grades. Right, they're gonna be like, okay, this kid got something. No, hopefully, but if not, I'll just keep creating. You know, I'll have odd jobs. I don't know.
It's Naya speaking, and Jude, I just want to tell you that that is more than possible for you. And I know I tell you this all the time, and I tell you I try not to bunch together you and your talent, because I don't want you to think that I only see you as this movie maker, blah, blah, blah. But I want you to know that you are so, so talented. Like, I've never met the way your mind works. It's just crazy. It's crazy that I'm acquainted with people like this. And I just want you to know that, like, really leaving the country and building up your portfolio, it can happen. And it does happen. And it works. And I don't just hope you don't think that, oh, that's just like a, you know, just like a far chance, or you that you have to go to college, but you don't. And like my aunt, like, she left, like, she completely left and lived in Panama and in the Philippines and in Europe and everywhere, just straight out of high school. You know what I mean? And I'm just saying, like, it can happen, especially for somebody as talented as you are. Like, and I really hope you start to really walk in that and walk in the knowledge of how. Wow, like, how talented you are. Like, really, I keep saying talented because there's no words to even grasp that. But I want you to know that what you have transcends what words could ever, ever, ever make up. What I want to do after high school, what I think I want to do, I've always been, my father is a militant, authoritative father, and all my life I've been thinking, oh, okay, college, after high school is college. My dad did not play about sports, about high school, things like that. And I realized that I don't know if that's necessarily the path I want to take. I know that I want to help people. I really, really do have an affinity for people, and I really, really do have an inclination to help people. I love people, and I would be the happiest if I could just wake up every day and really build connections, because I enjoy human connection. That's probably top three on my list ever of things that I enjoy about life. But I was thinking, and of course, I was given a scholarship to colleges, but that kind of made it super surreal for me. It made me realize, like, whoa, like, I might actually have to use this money to go to college. And it's just crazy because I wasn't always super, super sure. I mean, I knew I had to get good grades. I knew I had to do something after college, but it's just coming really quickly. But what I was thinking is, this summer, I want to put
outs crazy intention, crazy manifestation so that I can be guided directly to what I want to do. I don't want to be 40 in a job and have a realization or have a vision telling me, oh, I need to go do this or I'm going to start a business. No, I want that right out of college. And I feel like if I have the power and the tools to shift my reality and make it what I want it to be, I'm going to try to do that as much as I can. And I want it to be something creative, something that leaves me fulfilled, because I'm really all about fulfillment in everything I do, and in my friendships, in my music, just everything. I want to be fulfilled. And I think I wouldn't be able to leave this earth without being fulfilled career-wise. And so I'm very focused on this summer before senior year for the universe to guide me to things that I really, really want to do, hopefully in the creative field, but I want to be helping people as well. So,
all right, it's Carmen again. Just wrapping up this question about what I see myself doing in the near future. I'm going to be honest, I don't really like talking about the future, and it's not that I don't have plans or aspirations. That would be very far from the truth to make that claim. However, I'm not worried about any time but now, and what I'm doing now is sitting around a table with a bunch of really, really cool people, and hopefully in the near future, was in the summer, because I just finished my junior year. Hooray, hooray, hooray. Hopefully I'll get to see these people every single day. Yeah, so that's my plans for the near future.
All right, well, I guess I will conclude this by saying thank you again. This has been a really good experience for me, and I appreciate the time and the honesty and your answers. And here's to saving the world!
Thank you for tuning in to the All Souls Forum. Keep your radio dialed to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, for your Jazz Afternoon with KC, coming up immediately. Followed by The Boogie Bridge with Jason Vivoni, and then the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 p.m. In the meantime, have a great day.